Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Mahotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, we are always very pleased and honored to be able to broadcast live and in living color with you. Tonight is kind of a interesting dialogue that we're going to have. Of course, many of you have heard about the situation that just recently occurred in D.C. this week. It seems to be a slew of stuff going on that has to do with black folks getting killed around the area of the so-called White House. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight and, of course, some other things as well. Before we begin tonight's program, we certainly want to give thanks and praises to our Creator. And we are always very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. With that said, we're going to move on tonight to really, again, focus on what some call mind control. Now, again, we've heard different reports about what happened or may have happened in D.C. this past week. I'm still really not clear on a lot of stuff. I do know that one of the sisters of the black woman who was killed is now, you know, saying that the family needs kind of some more information, some more insight into what actually happened. Well, we're going to talk about that tonight. Joining us on the live line very shortly is going to be Dr. Randy Short. Okay, and so we're going to also have all of you to be able to also connect with us. We're going to open the chat room. It looks like we're pretty good for tonight. Our boards don't seem to be too congested tonight, which is a good thing, but, you know, that does happen. And, again, we advise all of you, if for whatever reason something should happen and we run into some difficulties, usually we are able to take care of it within a short period of time. So, again, if that should happen, we just ask you to all hang in there with us and, you know, usually we're able to get back on within a very short period of time. Okay, before we go into our dialogue or some of our dialogue for tonight, we certainly hope that those of you who received the e-blast that we sent out earlier this week about a documentary that's being shown at Lincoln University. Lincoln University, of course, is one of the historically black colleges, universities. Of course, we know Lincoln University for being the location where Sajifo Kwame Nkrumah attended. And so, you know, we've always kind of held Lincoln in a somewhat of a high regard, I guess you can say, given the fact that that is where our dynamic brother did attend. And, of course, in doing so, had the opportunity to meet and connect with many great minds. But with that said, many things have happened over the years. Certainly, there's been a lot of changes that have occurred in many of these colleges. I know because I did have the opportunity to attend a so-called institution of higher learning and can tell you that when we were there as students, we really did a bunch of stuff. And when I say that, I'm talking about fighting against apartheid, fighting the system in terms of housing. You know, students would hold a lot of different sessions to make certain that not only the students were aware, but that the community had access to the facilities, and also that whatever could be obtained from the institution, we made certain that the community at large was able to, you know, take advantage, positive advantage of that as well. It's not exactly what you see going on today. You don't see the kind of connection and interacting to the degree that it was. So I dare say a lot of change with, you know, what's going on with the relationship between the campus and the community. With that said, in Philadelphia, as we now know, there are certain parts of Philadelphia that's literally called University City. And family, what that means is, unfortunately, many cities all over the U.S. are being taken over by some of these colleges. Now, of course, that's not, I don't feel, applicable to the so-called historically black colleges because most of them are having financial problems. But these other people are truly expanding like you cannot believe. Temple University here in Philadelphia is now running blocks and blocks and blocks all over the city, really, but specifically in North Philly. The same with the University of Pennsylvania, the same with Drexel University, the same with St. Joe's and others. So I'm saying that to say that the climate, the type of connection to so-called higher learning is very questionable now as it pertains to the development of African people. Well, moving right along, this film, this documentary that is supposed to be shown on October 22nd is one that is really almost a joke. Now, when I say that, family, please know that it is not disrespectful to any of the sisters or brothers who may be in it, but specifically the sisters who, with good intention, were interviewed, were telling their stories and so forth. We salute them, we love them, and we look forward to connecting with them in the future for something real. But this person, this George Tillman, is a very slick person, a very skillful person as well. But as we all know, with Holly Weird, and he's not there yet, but certainly has aspirations to be so and to do so, he took advantage of a situation. He took advantage of a movement developing. He took advantage of people who were opportunistic and, well, he didn't take advantage of them, but he, you know, bought in too with them, of how they could whitewash something that was not in their control and so beyond their control that they had to get rid of it or had to try to cut it down as best as they could. And, yes, I'm talking about the Million Woman March. Now, over the years, I've taken the position to try to limit certain things that I've said or done. But now after this, I've really had enough. Over the years, there have been several people who have made claims or have said stuff that was just absolutely insane and certainly untrue. Well, with this man now going to the list that he has, and I truly suspect that someone in Philadelphia, excuse me, someone in Philadelphia has helped him to do this. So we're going to find out who, and we're going to keep you posted on that. And we have some other nice little surprises that we're going to be bringing forward about it. But the bottom line is, on October 22nd, we plan to be at Lincoln University. We plan to hold a rally and a demonstration there. We plan to make certain that a boycott, a national boycott, is called so that people do not go and see this this thing. Please do not purchase a DVD because he will be online and in cities trying to sell it. He knew that we were planning to do a reunion this year, and so he thought he would exploit us further by writing on that. But the point being, this man never contacted me. He never contacted anyone from the national office. He never contacted anyone that's affiliated with us. He even went to other groups and offered them money if they endorsed him and he would give them something to their nonprofit to, you know, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that these people do, have been doing, and until we begin to step to them in the best ways possible, they will continue to do this kind of stuff. Well, we're going to talk more about that when Dr. Randy Short comes on. But certainly, family, before we have our actual dialogue that we're going to have tonight, which is mind control, along with some other things, I really would love to know, what do you think? What do you think about George Tillman and his bogus Million Woman March documentary, and how he's claiming, oh, he wants to share the story of the women who came from Memphis, Tennessee to Philadelphia in 1997. He wants to share their stories. Yeah, I'm glad of that, and I look forward to them sharing their stories too. But not off my back, not off of our hard work, when you have taken no time to try to even find out how did the Million Woman March get started? When did it get started? Anything that he knows or things he knows, he heard in secondhand, third-hand, or fourth-hand dialogue. But at any rate, we're going to tell you more about that a little later on, and we hope that you all will post your questions or comments in the chat room. We're going to open that up in about 5 minutes. And we're going to also get ready to go to our live line, and in doing so, we're going to talk very shortly with our brother, Dr. Randy Short. But again, before we do that, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to take one or two calls just to kind of hear quickly what some of your comments may be, and then we're going to open up our dialogue tonight with Dr. Randy Short. We're going to talk about mind control. We're going to talk about how come nobody's saying nothing about this sister being killed. Do you all really believe what they're saying? And if so, why? Anyway, I'm going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Okay, and we're back. Again, you are in tune to New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and we are, in fact, gearing up for the 16th year anniversary of the largest gathering in the world of women anywhere ever, and now, of course, the first global movement for all women and girls of African descent to show what we are about and what it is that we are preparing to do. And some of the things that we plan to, so I almost said attack, but I won't say attack. I'll say address. We're going to begin to do that on October 25th when we are at the Justice Department. We charge genocide. Well, we're going to tell you more about that as well. But for right now, we're going to go to a caller. Let's see. You are at 8816. Before we open up our live line with Dr. Randy Short, do you have a comment or a question for us tonight? Hold on. I'm opening you up right about now. 8816. Let's see if we can get you open right about now. We got you. 8816. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Dorothy Dunning. I'm from Goshen, Mississippi. And I saw the incident on the TV about the young lady. I don't really understand it. Like one moment they said she had a gun, and the next moment they said it wasn't a gun. So I'm like the family. I would like to know, too, because if it was my loved one, I would want to know too. But I know when they went out, when they first went out, they said it was a gun. Now all of a sudden they saying she didn't have a gun. Now they saying her car was the weapon. But couldn't they tuck something and flatten the tires or something? That's what that's what I would like to know. And also,
all right, and Sister Dorothy, I want to thank you for calling in. I meant to get back to you this week, and we had an emergency with our one of our family members, so I was really off schedule a lot this week with some other things. But I'd like for you to stay right there. I need to talk with Dr. Randy Short for a moment and ask if I can let you come on first. He's scheduled to come on next, but I'm going to ask if he will just give us an additional 10 minutes because I would like for him to hear what you and I talked about earlier this week. I'd like for the rest of our family to also hear it because this, again, family, is why we have to have a African women's, a black women's direct action kind of group entity. We're hearing all these things. I mean, I have so many stories to share with you all tonight. One was a 23-year-old sister who was shot in Florida this week. She was pregnant, and they were able to get her to the hospital in time to save the baby, but she was killed by her boyfriend. Okay? That's just one of the stories that we got, or one of the states. Things we got this week. There's a couple of them. And I'm saying again, who really cares? So, Sister Dorothy, stay right there for one moment. I'm going to bring in Dr. Randy Short. I need to ask if it's okay to allow you to come on first. I know he's going to, but I think I need to at least ask him because I just asked him to call in at this time. Brother Randy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. And I need to say, first of all, that you're a queen and a goddess and a warrioress and a sister. You know that I'm a gentleman, and you know I had asked you about this sister from Mississippi, so you didn't even have to. When people from Mississippi say they have a problem, I stop. I can wait.
Right.
I'm up here, up south. They on the front line. So I respectfully cede my time to the great Sister Mother in Mississippi.
All right. Good. Thanks, my brother. All right. Sister Dorothy, all right. We got you. So, by all means, please share some of what you shared with me. And, family, I want you to please listen carefully because this is what we talked about some time ago. We kept telling people, see, we know that our men have always been under attack. Will always be under attack. And for whatever reason, some people thought that, okay, that meant they weren't going to come after the women. Well, wake up. Guess what? Crack cocaine. Who do you think that was the most devastating on, biologically, mentally, and in every other kind of way? Okay, so people didn't get it then. Well, the system has a new plan. The plan is incarcerate us or take our children away for some other kind of reason. So I'm going to leave it at that because now we're going to share a story with you about what it is I'm just saying and talking about. So, Sister Dorothy, please feel free to introduce yourself and definitely to share with us what it is that has happened.
I want to thank you, my sister, for giving me this opportunity to speak tonight. And I was also brought to my attention by Brother James, and I would really like to thank him as well. But I started out with a situation back in 2009. My son was on drugs. He was on crack, and the mother was on crack. And I had a granddaughter at the time in the great state of Minnesota, they would like to call it. And my granddaughter was 2 months old, and she was in the system, and I didn't know anything about it. The law states that any time a child is in the system, you're supposed to be contacted within 72 hours. I was never notified My son didn't even know the baby was there. The mother couldn't take the baby out of the hospital. They immediately, when the baby was, my granddaughter was 3 months old, placed her with a Caucasian, upper middle class white family. She had already had 4 children of her own. Then she had 3 more foster children. And she had my granddaughter. And I started fighting in 2009. I fought for over 4 years to try to get custody of my granddaughter. By that time, another granddaughter was born about 10 months later. They took my other granddaughter and placed her in this same home. When I first discovered my granddaughter was there, I asked them, could I come out to visit? They told me no, I couldn't visit. They told me I couldn't ask any questions about them until I go to school. At the time, it was just one. They told me I couldn't ask any questions about her. They told me I had to go to school and become licensed. Come to find out that you do have to get licensed, but you could have been, it could have gave me a waiver. But it's a stall tactic is what they're doing. They're stalling you. The longer they keep you away from your loved ones, that is a tactic so they can say that she was in the Caucasian woman's home that much longer and that she had bonded with them.
Right.
The judge said both families was capable of taking care of the child, but they ruled to place my granddaughter in the home with a white family all together with 9 children. She had 9 children, then her and her husband, and she kept trying to declare my granddaughter's special needs. They wouldn't declare them special needs because the state wouldn't do it, because if you get them declared special needs, she would have received $3,000 apiece for each child. She was plus she was had a nanny. She had 2 nannies. The state of Minnesota was paying for 2 nannies. And also, this is a common practice in the state of Minnesota, but it's not only happening in Minnesota, it's happening all around. It is a sabotage is out to deliberately divide the black family, separate us and tear our family down, because there's no way that I shouldn't have not got my granddaughters. This is, everybody hear this story cannot believe that a woman with 9 children, they will let her adopt my granddaughters. And I did everything in my power, went to school, did everything they told me to do. And then on top of this, both states ruled in my favor for me to get my granddaughters, both states. But the judge, which is a white lady judge, overruled and gave them to the family. And most of all, they tried to say it was the haves and the have-nots. They used that they had, really saying they was more educated than me, more wealth than me. You know, that's going to be the truth the majority of the time, because they are placing the kids in the homes of white families who are upper middle class white families. And this is their new way of making money. They making money off the backs of our families. They are not letting our kids return home. And this is what's so sad about it. You know, I had different ones in the state of Minnesota tried to come and help me fight. I've been looking, and if somebody hear me, I've been looking and looking, trying to find a federal lawyer to file a federal lawsuit, because they awarded her to adopt them. But I want to make a difference, and I'm begging someone to hear this conversation. Please get me in touch with a civil rights lawyer who could help me file a federal lawsuit, because I want to make a difference, not just for me, but for all the other families. Also, let me recite this. There was a case that just, it was just in the, on the, I just found out in oh, I can't even remember where it was at right now. But it was a case where there was a grandmother and a grandfather. They had just filed for custody of their grandchildren, and that state fought, a lawyer stepped up and fought, which was a white lawyer, stepped up and helped this family fought for their grandchildren, and they put a law on in Colorado. It was done in Colorado on September the 9th, and they just, she took it all the way to the Colorado Supreme Court, and they won, and the lawyer put on record that families should have preference. Families should,
right.
They should go to families first. They should, foster parents should not have more rights in natural family members. And they are deliberately keeping the children in the system. It is a new way of making money. It is a new form of slavery. And it just really, really bad. And also one lady, Miss Hattie Bond, she is a former superintendent in the state of Minnesota. She have done everything in her power to help me. And they have, the police have just started harassing her, just really harassing her, because she is a strong black woman and she wouldn't take down. She have continued to help me fight this fight. And they have just tucked it up on themselves. I mean, just everything beginning to happen to her. They begin to follow her. But we cannot take no for an answer. We need we need to come together and say, hey, you cannot have our kids. There was a time the grandmothers, they went and sought the grandmothers out. Now they are not seeking out the grandmothers. They are seeking out the Caucasian upper middle class families to come in and take possessions. Because you know what? I have believed that they are trying to transform our kids' mind and send them back into the community. This is what I believe, to make them think like them and act like them, and try to, so when they come back in the community, they'll mingle with others and try to get others to think the way they think. Now, that's me. That's my belief. That's my belief, and I really believe that, and I believe that they are deliberately trying to destroy the black family.
Absolutely. Now, Sister Dorothy, just for a point of clarity, did you say that this family, these people have already adopted the children?
They ruled for them to adopt them back in March. Yes, it's been a minute, and I've been fighting and fighting and fighting and not giving up. I'm not giving
up. Unbelievable! Unbelievable!
And she was also fighting breast cancer. This is unheard of. She was going through breast cancer, and they still let her adopt with nine children in a home. And then she wrote me a letter when the first day I ever laid eyes on her. She wrote me a letter and told, and the children should have been removed right then. She said in the letter, and I have the letter to this day, if I remove my granddaughters, that the house was going to burn down to the ground. Everybody in the house was going to burn to the ground.
Good.
It's just like everybody inside was going to die. And she gave me this crazy letter. Now, if that had been one of us, the children would have been removed immediately.
Okay.
And also, the lawyer that they had, he's the president over the adoption board in the state of Minnesota. He's the president over the Garden Lighting Board. All to me, that's conflict of interest.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know you can't wait, Brother Randy, so go. I know you have a definite response to this, so by all means, let us begin.
Okay. Let's go backwards and then I come forward. There's a lot of noise, but I'm going to try to be helpful. First and foremost, sister, that letter that you have, you need to make certain that you make about 100 copies and mail them to people all over the place so they can keep them. I don't know what's making the noise, but someone's dialing or something. Okay.
I'm not sure what it is.
You need to make as many copies of that.
Wow, that's interesting.
Okay. Yeah, someone needs their mic shut off or whatever. But just, sister, you need to make as many copies of that letter as possible. You need to file a civil rights complaint. In fact, you should file a hate crime thing against this person. You should explore and see. Now, here's my first suggestion. Again, make copies. Everybody that you can think of, so in case someone tries to destroy that letter, that you have multiple copies so they can't get rid of them, because that's a smoking gun. Okay, that's first and foremost. That's one. You need to have that. Wow.
Where is that coming from?
I have no idea. And they really don't want us to deal with this, but that's okay.
No, obviously not.
Let me try it again. Please make certain that you send Empress Phile a copy of that. The next thing you need to do is you need to get a notary public. You need to sign and date and all that stuff and have someone notarize that as evidentiary information. You need to, I can find you a pro bono attorney that can do some things. This is what I'm going to, we can work on this starting on Monday. Take this name down because my short-term memory is bad, sister. My family on my father's grandmother's side fled Mississippi to North Carolina, so I know it's serious. I know that's happened in Minnesota, but, you know, Mississippi is serious. The woman's name is Sue Glisson. Sue Glisson works at Old Miss University in Oxford. She would know some civil rights people. If you're down in Mississippi, are you in Minnesota or Mississippi?
I live in Mississippi.
Okay, all right. Sue Glisson is in Mississippi. There's another woman attorney who's a friend of mine who's a hellraiser. Her name is Dawana Watkins. I'll have to try to find her, but those are two names. The other thing that I'd strongly recommend that you do is I have another friend who got several thousand children adopted in the state of Minnesota. I'm going to get Sister Empress to give me your number so you and I can talk, because my friend might know how to run game because he knows some of the people in the political structure there. What I'd recommend, if you have any friends or family, you need to work on putting some pressure on the political people who need votes. This is the first, that's another dimension. Not that the political thing is perfect, but sometimes you can make them do something for you. So you need to know who your senator is, your assembly person. You need to know the whole thing.
Now, hold that point right there, Brother Randy, because I believe when I did speak with Sister Dorothy earlier this week, Sister Dorothy, you can correct me if I'm wrong, you have attempted, or not attempted, you did speak with a couple of politicians who, unfortunately, you know, have been given a runaround. Is that correct?
Yes.
That is correct. My case went all the way up to the Minnesota Supreme Court.
Okay.
And they ruled for the lady to adopt the kids, the foster mom.
I'm hearing you. I'm still thinking something different. I'm not attacking.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. We're learning about this after it's happened, okay? So I'm not dismissing anything. I'm only thinking that, first and foremost, every single solitary one of those politicians, as well as the judge, and all of them should have a copy of this letter. As well, we need to put together a press statement where this letter goes out, because this would be a major embarrassment that they're giving someone who threatens to kill the grandmother and the family, they get the children. You see, someone sometimes, because this needs to be, the facts of the case left aside, this letter, which is a threat, which you should file a police complaint against her, even if it's late, just to do it, in Mississippi. We have no idea when it comes down to a hate crime, because this is because you're black. If the statute hasn't gone, then you should file hate crime charges against this woman and her husband. And if there's any way possible to have them charged under conspiracy, because he knows she sent it to you. You got to start.
Oh, she signed it. She signed it and got her name on it and everything.
I'm with you. I'm saying to you, this is one of the things that gets us. When we fight them, we do not fight them like we don't care if their house burns down, too. We tend to fight them with the politeness, okay? And that's not what they understand. These people figured that they had you pegged as someone who's not on their level that they can roll over. And this right. contributes to how, and I'm not saying that you did anything wrong, I'm saying you did everything right, but I have my godbrother. He's a beautiful person. He constantly has legal problems, not because he doesn't obey the law, but because they perceive somehow he's working class and black. No matter how smart we are, that's perceived that we are stupid and we can be screwed with. And I have spent the last 3 years assisting him with his lawyers, fighting all sorts of people who constantly do things to him, like what's happening to you. And what I had to teach my godbrother is that you have to be ruthless where you're going to destroy people within the best you can within the system. So they may have your children, but if you could destroy their image in the media, trust me, that's one step. There are other things that need to be done. For instance, Sister Empress knows Rajasthan
yes.
Shaheed. We can plug you into them because this is a human rights issue. So I'm thinking there are many ways that this can be attacked. And then I'll be honest with you, Mother. Forgive me. What kills me about our folks, I'm not talking about you, we'll have a problem like this and we'll do it on a case-by-case basis. It's insane. If you can find 5 or 6 other women, wherever they are in the country, black, find them. Because I hear about this. This happens in D.C. all the time. They're giving all the kids to gay people. But you can't get, and I'm not saying you, but I'm going to just say something about a lot of black men and women. They try to do everything only on their individual case. I heard you say you wanted to help other people. God bless you. Normally, they only want it solved for themselves. Which means that instead of establishing a precedent where we come together united as a community to say we're not going to take the crap, we do it one at a time. That's exhausting to anyone that deals with community issues. Why should someone deal with this 10, 20 times in a row? Instead of saying part of our energy will be when you, and we're going to ask you to join the National Million Women's Movement, that this be part of your work with us, that you're going to gather all the other women everywhere you can find them and put energy, because we're going to crush this. This is not slavery, sister. This is ethnocide. I've been to Australia and seen them destroy the Aborigines by taking their children. They molest and rape them. They used to do this with Native Americans here and Native Americans in Canada and with Maoris. And they would do this with colored kids in Namibia. This is genocide, and they know. Now, I was going to ask you just clearly, is a woman with breast cancer, what's the ethnicity? What kind of white people are they? Are they German? Are they Swedish?
I don't know.
What's their last name?
Their last name is Grosser.
Jewish. Now, we got it. I knew what it was. I just want you to tell me. Okay?
Wow.
I mean, forgive me. I got some of that in me. I know them when I'm dealing with them. If all one needs to do is then begin to contact the local rabbis. Tell them, hey, what's up with this? Why are you guys stealing our kids? You guys beef about the Holocaust and folks taking your kids. Why are y'all taking ours? That's a fair question. We never, we some of the people doing this stuff to us, forgive me, it all has a pattern. Remember that Malcolm X, when they destroyed his family, they put him with the Jewish family? They were in Nebraska, right? No, they were in Michigan. Nearby, not far. There's a whole scamming system, and this is why you're encountering some of the problem. If you don't, in fact, this is something where you should try to get some NOI and other people, because these folks won't want the heat. If the black community gets mad and catches them in the middle of their game, some folks will think your grandchildren are too hot to hold. But there should be some other questions about this. Even you need to contact the Inspector General. Is there a cap on the amount of money that
I tried. I did. I tried. And you know what they told me?
Hold on.
They told me they couldn't do nothing.
The Inspector General can do as much as they want. Because then you go to the control of the currency for the state. You find out who it is, and you call for an audit of that family.
Tried
you
that,
call
too.
But have you put it in the media? Have you gotten someone to start saying, we're going to ask if this is corrupt? There's got to be a law or a rule that governs how much they get, how they can get it, and what. If they're simply doing whatever they want to do, which they often do, then there's some questions there. If the judges are friends to their family or whatever it is.
Yes, I believe it's all connected. And Miss Patty Bonds is on the line, too. She can tell you, she lives in Minnesota, and she can tell you a lot more about it. And she's on the line tonight, Miss Patty Bonds. She knows it like the back of her hand.
Let's just say this very briefly. Ms. Hattie, if you are listening, please press 1 so that I know where you are. And I just want to also say, before we go back to Dr. Wendy Short and Sister Dorothy, that this is, again, family, why it's so important that we are organized. Because for one person or for a few people to do all these various things, it's sometimes very difficult. But when you have an organization, for lack of a better word, I'm not about organizations. Let's be real clear on that. I'm building a movement. That's not an organization. But I'm saying this is why it's so important. And sisters, please connect to something. If you have your own group, fine. But let's become somewhat centralized, at least when it comes to strategizing and implementing some work. We have to do that. The Mailman Movement is designed to do that. So, again, in order to help this sister and other sisters, we've got to be organized. We have to be on a similar or same page. So, with that said, I'm going to go back to Dr. Randy Short. I do see you, sister. I'm sorry, give me sister's name again, Sister Dorothy.
Hattie Bond.
Okay, Sister Hattie, I got you, and I'm going to be bringing you in very shortly, so you just stay right there. So Sister Dorothy and Dr. Randy Short, you two continue, and we'll bring Sister Hattie in a few moments.
Okay, so my thought is you've probably done everything that you were supposed to do within your capacity as one person. Or your truth. Ooh.
And also, Dr. Randy showed what happened. Inside Edition had contacted me to do an interview. Me and my husband, they was going to fly us out to New York City and do an interview with us. And then they went and called the family that we had went to court with and their lawyer. After they got through talking with their lawyer, they called us back and told us they couldn't do the interview.
Well, that's ethnic You know, everybody knows that I called New York, so I don't have to say it. Okay. And so you, everything points back to this crime has an ethnic stain. We need to start. Forgive me, I'm going to say something to you, and we need to have this discussion as people. You're probably a good church. Ooh, I don't know if you're doing this tonight.
What's going on?
I don't. I mean, there's so much noise. Do you hear it?
Oh, no, I'm not hearing it now.
Okay, I'm hearing
it. I can hear it.
Okay,
wow.
Well, let's try to talk over it. It's just you don't know if everyone is hearing what you're saying or not. But anyway, I want to suggest this to you, and I suggest it to everyone. We need to really find out, even if it's just a handful of people, find out who are the people who are getting our children. If we can find any demographic information, because some of these things are going to repeat themselves. Okay, and when I say demographic, don't just go for white, because that's not saying anything. Zimmerman was Jewish. That's why he got off the shooting Trayvon. Okay, and nobody wanted to say that. And I was disgusted with the black community because we don't say. They say who commits crimes when it comes down to us, and they're very specific. When you talk about something, if you say white people have our children, it's not completely correct that the people are all Khazars. You need to say who has your kids, because then it becomes, because in Minnesota you got all the Germans and Swedes who probably don't want no black kids for whatever reason. When one comes and says whites did it, it's not completely accurate if it's a specific group of them. And so we're going to have to grow up, but a lot of profiteering within the social services and the courts are infested with a specific group of people that target us because we're weak. And you have a hard time getting anybody to do anything about it because we got all these folks who are sending money to find, to help elderly and old Jews resettle in Israel. I talk about black church folks sending money in to televangelists, and they can't help you with your babies here in the United States. This kind of confusion in our community where we think everybody's chosen but ourselves. Everybody's rights and concerns need to be addressed. Having said that, you need to find a committee, and we need to really, once we're off this call, try to think about at least a good strategy. As well as we need to find out who it was, if you have the names of the people in New York who canceled the show, because even that, man, they don't want me talking to you.
And I say that, and Nigga, guess what, and the lady who called me, I did not erase her message. I have it to this day on my answering machine. And
I'm going to tell you, from having worked in television, I bet you if you did a staff search, a lot of them are going to be the same thing as folks that had your grandchildren. And they made an agreement to take your kids. You say, I'm going to put this down for you, and not that it's going to be something that you use right away, but I always encourage people, because most of us that have gone to church have been lied to by nigger preachers. Our nigger preachers tell us that we have some Judeo-Christian religion, and it's a lie. If you go to your computer, if you have one, and you put in the word Talmud, T-A-L-M-U-D, and then put the capital letters A-N-D and Jesus, and then you can do other searches, and Christians, and blacks, you're going to find out the Talmud, which is the holy authoritative text for most people like us that had your grandchildren, what they think of us in their holy book is something that makes Hitler look like a choir master. I mean that. And so when we encounter these systematic problems within cities, when we start talking about how the democratic machine in this city and that city doesn't do this or that or the other, who runs the Democratic Party machine in all these cities where we are? Okay? As you're struggling to get your children, all the people that are running to be mayor of New York City have pledged to allow, to support rabbis sucking the penises of eight-day-old babies, even if they get herpes and die from it. That's how these groups, I mean, for stuff that is non-essential as that, I'm not trying to be gross, it's a fact. That's how that community operates around stuff they really shouldn't want to do. Isn't that amazing that the mayors are running after these people, say, yes, they can have oral sex with an eight-day-old baby, and yet when you're trying to get yours, all of them can come together and block you, and yet we don't say who's doing it? So
is that they culture or something they doing? Is that they culture or something?
Well,
I never heard of that.
It's part of the culture, and yet, as black folk get shot and killed in New York, they can't get any attention for their problems, but there is attention for them to suck on an eight-day-old baby. And we have to think about where these things are happening to us and who's in the political system. And then we've got to grow up and stop being stupid and talking this Judeo-Christian madness. I get sick of hearing it. Because if we're really Judeo-Christian, then I need to be sucking on an eight-day-old baby, and so do all my other buddies. So we need to start looking and being honest that there is a culture of wickedness and venality and cruelty. If you ever look and see what that Talmud says about non-Jews being cattle and to be treated any old kind of way, to take their stuff, to take their children, is normal. Their holy book says so, not me. Don't quote me. This ain't mine. This is reading their stuff, trying to understand. And once you see that, then you'll see every dirty trick that's been running you. That's the way it's supposed to be done, because you're a goy. And one day our people are going to wake up and realize the child welfare systems and the courts that send our people to jail, start looking at who the judges are, who the prosecutors are. They keep getting it over and over and over again. And we refuse to learn the lesson that someone is at war with us. Not that it's white folks, but then there's specific groups of white folks that take specific roles in doing it to us.
Wow.
Why won't we be honest about it? And no, I didn't say one group took all the money. I never said that, because that's the way the little idiot black folks listening are going to try to say I said one group did it all. No. But all you need to do, and I'm just saying this for your state of Minnesota, you should go on and check out your jurisdictions or how your judgeships are set up by the state, and look at the last names throughout the state or just in the greater St. Paul, Minneapolis area, and you'll start seeing a pattern of who are the judges. Okay? I did that for Trayvon. I went through the entire northern part of Florida, did a demographic survey based on names, looked up the names, says, wow, there's no way Zimmerman's going to get convicted. No way. And last but not least, a little factoid that nobody wants to tell you. One of the biggest names in the slave trade was Zimmerman.
Wow.
That's why they've been quiet about it. So, but that's another discussion. But, sister, just for your own education and edification, do a little look up on what this Talmud is about, because that's the philosophical rot that you're facing.
Okay.
And a lot of our people need to grow up. I mean, I'll just give you an example, and then I'll stop. If you're a Christian or a Baptist, Methodist, Catholic, what are you, if I could ask?
Pentecostal.
Oh, even worse. You Kojic?
Yes.
Okay. You've been told your whole life Jews are God's chosen people, you know, God's, okay, all right. I'm apostolic by background. So I grew up just worshiping everything Jewish. Everything Jewish was cool, because I thought that Judaism was the Old Testament. If you study Jesus in the New Testament, he gave folks who practiced Judaism a hard time because they weren't really practicing it. If you want to know what Jesus was reacting to, read the Talmud. And if you want to find out what Jews think about Jesus, they think he's in hell. They think he's cooking in a pot of feces. It's in their book. Mary was a whore. Now, if I said this in a black church, in your Koja church, you would tell me I was demon-possessed and y'all be praying for me, pleading the blood on me, right? Getting blessed oil and everything. Well, how can you be in a Judeo-Christian America if those people believe that? You would have demons cast out of me for even saying it. And yet they write it down in a book and see it as the word of God, and you're in a relationship with them and you're walking the same way? Are you serious? So you need to be liberated from seeing them as chosen and start seeing yourself as chosen. They've already chosen themselves, and they've chosen against everybody else. That's all I'm going to say on that.
Okay.
Okay.
Definitely a lot, and definitely needed to be said. But what I want to do now is bring in Sister Hattie, because she's going to, you know, share some other information that we need to know as we begin to develop some strategy. And Sister Dorothy, we are going to develop some strategy to work to make certain that some of what Dr. Randy Schwitz just said and some of what we've talked about, we're going to make some of this stuff happen. Now, all of you know, there is a rally for justice at the Justice Department on October 25th. It's a beginning. It's to begin to get cases such as this and other situations so that we can start documenting them, so that we can start filing these things, so that we can prepare to go to the UN. Because for real, these local joker people, they don't care nothing about what we do with them, most of them. But some of them will respond to the fact that, oh, these people ain't playing. That can expose us, not just in our own hometown, but nationwide and worldwide, you see. That's the kind of stuff we've got to be talking. So we'll talk more about that shortly, but we're going to bring in now Sister Hattie. Sister, give me 1 second. I'm going to attempt to open up your mic right about now, and I think I got you. Sister Hattie, do we have you? Sister Hattie? Okay, maybe not. Let me try.
I can hear. Can you hear me?
Okay, I can hear you now. Okay, very good. How are you tonight?
I had my phone on mute and didn't realize it because I didn't want to have all that background noise going.
All right, well, we got you now. So how are you this evening?
I am blessed and highly favored in the Lord, just like you.
So, Sister Hattie, share with us. Sister Dorothy was saying that you had some other information you needed to share with us.
Yes. Well, let me say this. I did attend the Million Woman March, and I took my daughter, who's now 32 years old. And I must say, the things that are going on here and what has happened with Mrs. Dunning, I was really rather shocked because I have adopted 3 children out of that system. Myself, I had no idea that they were actually, what we call it, kidnapping or stealing people's children.
Right.
Now, when I began to help Mrs. Dunning, which is about a year ago approximately, pretty much having been in public education, as she said, a teacher, principal, associate superintendent, I had no idea why my friends and neighbors were telling me, don't get involved in that, don't get involved in that. But my heart could not let me not get involved in that, because what was happening to Mrs. Dunning was absolutely wrong, and I thought about my daughter and what would happen if she had something bizarre happen or something, and then my grandchildren, biological grandchildren, ended up in somebody else's home, and I could not get them to adopt them myself and take care of them. It would really drive me up the wall. So at any rate, I think that in terms of the political dynamics of Minneapolis, Minnesota, is one that is very unique, I think, to our country. Not that the same things aren't going on every place else, but here it's kind of a schism that goes on. And you won't find necessarily people that will help you that look like you because there's a great fear of the system here. And after 1 year of trying to rock and roll in it and help her to the best of my ability, I understand now what people are afraid of. I've never understood why they were afraid. After much work, I've had some of the most bizarre things happen to me since helping Mrs. Dunning out, but the district court, which is Mrs. Catherine Quintus, was the judge that did the original ruling at the district level, who is a judge that proceeded to try to do some criminal charges with me after I started helping Mrs. Dunning, and a lawyer was able to get me changed to another judge to handle the situation, but she moved from juvenile court to criminal court. And so these are the kinds of moves that these people make here in order to stop people, to start criminalizing anybody who tries to intervene and do a social justice type activity here. Now, once we had ruled on that and it went to the Minnesota Supreme Court, we had two African-Americans sitting on the Supreme Court. One was African-American female. The other was African-American male. The others, and you could take a look at the document on the ruling, and it was just amazing. The African American male said it should have really gone back to the district court, and Ms. Catherine Quincy should deal with it. The African American female sided with the others and said that the family members. That the foster family should be able to adopt the two little African-American girls. This is our second round with this sort of thing here in Minneapolis. About 15 years ago, we had the Baby D case, which went to the Minnesota Supreme Court, and then it further ended up into the U.S. Supreme Court. It was a grandparent, two parents out of Ohio, I believe it was, at that time. And our church actually spearheaded that movement to get these grandparents reunited with their granddaughter that they didn't ever know they had here because their daughter had come here and they never notified them. And eventually the child was returned to the African-American grandparents. Since then, I think what has happened is there have been a lot of additional books, laws put on the book, something called best interest of the child, because after the Baby D case 15 years ago, what we did is we said we want families to have preference. Now, if there's a family member that is capable of taking care of the children and they've been okay to do it, that's what should happen. I mean, that's a natural transition. However, the Heritage Act. And the Heritage Act took care of that up until a point. And I think about 6 years ago, somebody was not watching the store, and they allowed these people to put in what's called now the best interest of the child. The best interest of the child somewhat knocked, this is what they used with Mrs. Dunning's case, that knocks that out, and so who decides what's the best interest of the child? Now, if there are state statutes on the book that just talk about a general progression of who gets children. First, the other parent, which is the biological father, which is his son at this point, and then from there it goes on, down, and down, on. And that was just not looked at all. It was just best interest of the child, which meant, and they turned it over to, he has more education, they have more economic wealth.
Right.
No, that's not the best interest of those children. The best interest of those children is your family intact. Because, like the brother said, you're practicing genocide. That's all you're doing.
Right. That's right.
And everybody in this country pretty much knows that the child protection system goes after African American children, poor children, and we have 80 to 90% of the children in child protection. That's why I said I'm going to go in and pull me, so I'm out. I'm just going to go in and adopt them, take them home with me, so when I retire, I can take care of them. Now, the first one they gave me was a little Caucasian boy. I don't care what color children are. If they need help, I will help them. Ended up with him, worked hard with him. The next two I got were African-American children. So, long story short, someone went to sleep at the wheel. Best interest of the child. Now, you still have the family preference on the books, and they should have at the federal level, because we get in federal, lots of federal dollars here. Federal level,
right.
They should have looked up the family member. And that's what that federal statute says. They didn't even bother about that. They did what they wanted to do. And so we know that that's what they do. Consequently, any day now, they may be dealing with me on any level. I had some craziness happen last week where they told me they were coming to get me.
Okay.
It's just one thing after the next. And we do have to go to another level. We can't keep dinking around in this locale because, you know, when Mrs. Dunning was here, she witnessed it. The police arrested me, handcuffed me. I ended up falling down. I'm disabled, I have a walker, I have a cane, so it was just unbelievable. I'd never seen anything like this in my life. And what I said, I came to the conclusion that we have neo-Nazi activity on our police department. I think we're dealing with this situation here in Minneapolis because I filed a complaint against the police in Minneapolis. For stalking me, harassing me, and once you do that, you really have, I guess, a lot of problems. I took a bus out of here to the March on Washington, the 50-year commemoration. I came back, everything was fine. The next day afterwards, they wanted me to be here when they did it. And I think the police did it, I'm sure. Vandalized my automobile, tore the DVD out of the top, and shot the back window out of my car. And this is, all of this trouble has happened since I have started effing Mrs. Dunning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's not just a genocide. I think it's neo-Nazi, the white supremacy piece interjected here. And I have always been a civil rights, social justice kind of advocate in this town. And I've been here about 27 years in Minneapolis. And the politicians, some of them in the past have been very good about social justice kinds of movements. What we've been able to do since this happened to Ms. Dunning, a group of us women here, three or four of us, have gone to the legislature, putting in and asking them to sculpt out some form of legislation so that this kind of thing can be prevented. But I really like that idea that the gentleman told Mrs. Dunning about, sending that letter all around to different people. Yeah.
I definitely agree. But my concern is, because I've been down this road before, when it comes time for things that have to get done, when responses have to be put into effect and so forth and so on, there has to be a group, a team, or something in place to make certain that once this stuff starts going out, who's going to be processing the rest of the stuff that needs to happen? See, so, yes, these are some of the things that we need to do, but we also need to make certain that there is an entity in place that will continue the work that will obviously be coming. Research has to be done. More communications have to be administered and filed. And so we have to make certain that we can do the necessary follow-up stuff.
No, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And one of the – we tried to put in – we started simply because of Mrs. Dunning here in Minneapolis. Pauline Thomas, who works with the Legal Rights Center here, had gotten in touch with Mrs. Dunning, And she suggested that we start one of the National Action Network chapters here. We proceeded
to do
that.
Oh, my God.
We proceeded to do that. And
well,
we can talk about that.
Oh, gosh.
And of course,
finish that, please.
Okay, no, I know where you're at, because we had hoped that that would be some form of assistance to us, and what we found happening, and people may not understand it, but there were other agendas that kind of usurped our agendas, and then it became a little bit more and more convoluted. But I'm still hopeful that on some level there will be something that we can hang our hat on to there. But like you said, I believe it has to be a structure put in place. We had hoped that would have been it. I don't know at this point if that's going to be sufficient or not. I had told my colleague Pauline that maybe we should go on as a committee rather than getting involved in an organized group like that and starting a chapter, because what I have found in the past with many of the organizations, you have, by the time you get approval to do something, it's just kind of late.
Mm-hmm.
If you get the approval,
mm-hmm.
ever.
True.
and also, there's a real conflict of interest as well in that regard, too, because, see, remember, most, if not all, of these so-called civil rights groups and so forth are highly funded by the corporations and, of course, by the government. So now, the reality is, when you start going up against the government, well, okay, sometimes you can do some local stuff, depending on who they know in other branches of the government. So in all reality, when you have a group that's funded by the government and you think you're going to fight the government, that's just not realistic. Not only that, it's important in this day, my sisters and brother and family, that we start talking more about human rights. The civil right thing, of course, is important. It is significant. It is applicable. However, we keep beating our heads up against the wall in the same way, and we're not asserting some very valuable kinds of tools that have been given to us. We're not talking about human rights, because then we can have other groups of people more readily able to support what we're talking about, you see. And in this day and age, with everything being, you know, so worldwide, it behooves us to begin to connect some of these dots. So I'm saying, for those who are talking about civil rights, yes, absolutely. However, if we're going to really fight, we better understand the dynamic and the power of taking the position of our human rights. This is the 21st century. We better act like we know this. If not, we'll continue to play this game the way they set it up for us. Because who in hell did that civil rights thing really go into effect? Where did it really come from?
Agents, white women, gays, and primarily Jews. Jewish people were segregated under what was called restrictions. Everybody got more out of it than we did. And in fact, the thing that disgusts me about the history that we get on the civil rights movement is the idea that it was all about us. And ask me,
right.
I mean, let's sit down and think about it. Rosa Parks got arrested for being on a bus, and a citywide movement resulted. Trayvon Martin is dead. Mac Dade is dead. Marissa Alexander is still in jail. They let this guy, Herman Watts, literally be in solitary confinement 41 of 43 years.
And in reality, we've been lied to, and we've bought into the lie that it was us being bit by dogs and shot by hoses that got us our rights. If that's true, all the people that they've shot in just the last 5 years, we should be free. If they were beating them in the 60s and it made the difference if we were willing to be beaten for democracy, when we get shot down, shouldn't we see some benefit for it? The answer is the difference between then and now is the Cold War. It was geopolitically in the interest of the ruling elites in this country who were trying to get other people to side with the United States against the non-aligned nations and Russia, okay, to do things for us. And let's look at when stuff really got crazy. When the Berlin Wall came down, that's about the same year that Rodney King got the hell whipped out of him. Things have been going down ever since. There's been no conflict between Russia and the United States. Civil rights was a game. Civil rights was a ploy. And we're the only people who haven't recognized that it's a game. All the people who claim to be such great civil rights stalwarts, I'm not talking about the ones that got killed or the ones who got discredited. I'm talking about people like Con Lewis. I didn't say John. I said Con Lewis. You know, Julian Blonde and some of these other people who are fighting for every other cause but yours. I can assure you if you guys went to the NAACP right now, they wouldn't help you. But
you don't have to tell me. We did. We've been there. We've done that.
Oh, I know you went to them. I know you went to them. But you know what? You could have said that y'all were gay. They would have got you that baby then.
Mm.
All you had to do is say the two of you were a couple and hide your husband, and they would have got you the baby.
That's not beneath me. I'm desperate at this point to help this woman.
You know
I'm not saying anything.
I might try it. I bet you if you came out tomorrow and you said you were being discriminated against because you were a gay black senior. In fact, we should do this.
Woo!
Just to show you the reason I'm saying this. Was my first job out of divinity school, because nobody would hire me. I was working in a hotel and I encountered racial discrimination constantly, and I knew I couldn't get any help. No, I knew I'd get fired because I was working. Y'all remember 20-some-odd years ago they fired a black woman for having braids and she got $3 million? That's
okay.
Where I was working. Okay. I was working the same. Literally, I met her. I came in like 2 weeks before she left that job and got her money. And what happened was someone made a slur to me, a white male made a slur to me, and I said, you know what, I'm going to use this. I went to my boss, who looked like Dr. Spock from Star Trek, but was a woman, looked like Dr. Spock with boobs, and told her that I wasn't going to be intimidated at my place of work. And I live a very private life. I don't bother anyone. And I kept saying this over and over again, and I shouldn't be intimidated at my job. And that was cold, because I understand. And she said, who's bothering you? I said, well, I don't really want to make you trouble. I live a very private life, and I don't think I should be intimidated. They nearly fired this guy. I never had another problem. I never said I was doing, but I used her code, and all of this is, oh, they're bothering one of us. So you know what? Tomorrow, if you guys were to, you know, like, fake come out just for the hell of it, watch all of those people come running to help you. To show you how bizarre this thing is now.
Wow.
And so more than one time, I said, shoot, I can't get any help because I'm black. Even the black folks won't help me. But you know what? If I say someone said something, I feel uncomfortable. All of a sudden, the apparatus works. And if we want to say something, if we're really honest, gay means white pervert power. White male pervert power, and a whole bunch of them are czars. Start looking at who the spokespeople are for that stuff. They'll be in the same group of the people that have your babies. Don't get mad at me. Go look it up. You'll keep finding. And trust me, I didn't think like this. Like I said, I came up in the church, and those are God's chosen people, and we got to learn to work with them. And the older I get, it says, I'm confused. If God chose them, well, I need a new God.
Oh, my goodness.
Woo! So,
yes,
yes, but you said, but the NAACP, which is a national association for asking Caucasians permission, or the National Association for the Abortion of Colored People, but they're not about doing anything for us. And so, but sisters, I believe that, like I was saying, the civil rights movement has nothing to do with us. And what did happen that we're not understanding, that Sister Fillet pointed out, the Convention for the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, it was international treaties on human rights law.
That's right.
That set the basis for what happened in this country. And in fact, the main thing that the United States was doing when the UN was being formed was trying to keep black people from raising the issue of genocide in 1946. And the National Association for the Abortion of Colored People in 1946 decided to be against the full advancement of African American people in order to continue their funding in 1946. So they've always been on the wrong road since 1946, and I have a little document that I quoted. In fact, I should read some of it to you. The NAACP started its plan in September 1965 to not do things for poor black people as part of improving its image. Okay, I got the document. I'm going to dig for it and read it to you. And this is what their proposal for improving themselves was, that we're not going to help poor black people anymore, so white people will like us and give us money. So if you go to them for help and they think, well, what you upset about from Mississippi? A good white family got those kids. They're going to do way better than anything you could do. What you going to do, teach them how to pick cotton? They would say something stupid like that to you. You don't have to tell me.
Well, that's exactly the way some of the African-American people feel here in Minneapolis. Those children great people there. She should be glad they want those children.
Mm-hmm. And tell them. And that way they won't be in the field picking. I mean, what was she going to give to them? Doesn't she want to retire? She can go down and go to the casino now. Shoot, they could come take my kids.
Exactly. Well, I would be really interested in what your perspective is on the, what is that, neo-Nazi white group fit in that's so tight-knit that's running all the government money to harass the citizens, particularly African-Americans.
Oh, you mean the Koch brothers or Obama? Or something like that. No, I didn't say Obama. But he may have said let me just tell you about the Koch brothers. And the little bit I know, this is my little gossip piece I keep repeating. Do you know that Howard University buys all of its paper products from the Koch brothers? And I bet you other black universities do. So, and do you know Fox News that dogs black people 24/7? They're the ones that they were, at least up until last year, they were the ones funding a significant part of the NAACP's Image Awards.
Mm. 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 I can believe
okay.
it.
You know, I'm not trying, you know, I don't know. I live here in D.C. with all these blacknecks, and I can't stand them, so I enjoy talking bad about them. In fact, I hope they're listening. I mean, hate me, and the feeling is mutual. We shouldn't like traitors. But the neo-Nazis,
they're
not the people that bother me. Who bothers me are groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center, which should be helping you. But Southern Poverty Law Center, if you go to them, sister, they're Khazars too. So they're not going to want to come down on there stealing your babies. Are you feeling me? So almost every way that you go, the neo-Nazis are the least of my problems. Because you know what? They put out a clear message that they hate black people and they want to kill us. And you can unify around that.
The one they come up beside me and the little young white boy says, we're going to get you.
Now, my question to you is, where if you have to turn your house into a hip-hop studio to get you some young people in there that like fighting,
I'm sorry, Brother Randy. Yeah, I'm sorry. Please finish that sentence, and then I'll say what I need to say about that.
The only point I was making is, and this is a problem that I see in our community, especially in the church and everywhere else, we have not found a way to teach our young people how to channel all that energy that they have into things that we need them to challenge it into. For example, I love gangs. I just don't like who they fight. You need to make your house a gangster paradise. I assure you, the skinheads won't want to be over there. But they'll mess with someone because, oh, it's just a little old black woman. But because, you know, you had some little thug life. I mean, if they're going to die for something, let them die for their community. People trigger happy. Well, hey, go over there and fight Boner and Newt Gingrich. I mean, at least, you know, make the funeral that we're going to have, you don't deserve worth it. But, you know, don't just shoot each other like they're doing in Chicago. That's ridiculous.
Exactly.
The document, I found it. I just want to run this down, Sister Freeland. I promise to stop. This is from 1965, and this is what one of the opinions that these people, this group, I got this out of a CIA assets file at the Library of Congress. What's the NAACP's plan doing in a CIA assets file for? And these must be his mentors, mentees. Check this out. Creating the right image to overcome the fears. To complete a revision of the Negro's images in order at this time. Great strides have been achieved in the legal areas of civil rights. Greater strides await accomplishments in the social acceptance of civil rights and social rights. Listen to the suggestion. Stress the positives. Concentrate on the haves rather than the have-nots. Highlight individual or neighborhood achievements. Where none exist, create them. Feature the miracle of the paradox of our system. Research this right image, find out what is the Achilles heel, and then give it everything you can. Imagine that. The paradox of the system is we're as screwed up now as we were then. But the NAACP is going to tell you how much progress. That's why you took the bus to come here for the farce on Washington. I was here, and Freeway was here. I didn't see any rats until like a week or two ago. The rats didn't even want to be near the march. And people flew all over the place. I'm done.
Okay, I'm not sure how I can follow that, but I'll try. You know, this is why we love our brother, and he has found a home here at New Day, without a doubt. But Sister Hattie, first of all, I want to thank you so much. You have shed a lot of light, at least as far as I'm concerned, on what's going on there. And just
Amen.
Some things in general. So, again, I thank you so much for that. But I also want to say this. That I keep going back to, again, that we must begin to deal with knowing how to strategize and how to be connected in such a way to implement those strategies. The one thing about the Million Woman March that I learned in a very difficult way was if you don't have a few very committed people who are going to stick with you no matter what, who's sharing the vision, who understands what's going on, then it becomes extremely complicated and very disturbing, because it took me 16 years to clean house, to restructure, only because, I had an open-door policy. And the open-door policy was for any sister or brother who wanted to help, who wanted to be a part of. Well, while that was noble in one regard, it was disastrous because people took advantage of that. They were opportunistic, and they had so many hidden agendas. And as a result, it created a lot of confusion, chaos, and misdirection. So it took a long time to straighten some of that out. My point is that we have survived. We are now moving forward. Dr. Rainey Short is one of our brothers in support.
of the Million Woman Movement. So as you can tell, we have both a sisterhood that we're building and a brotherhood that we're building. He and I both are ready to travel. We are have guns, will travel. You know, and we see it, when I say have guns, we're talking about mentally, spiritually, will travel. Okay? So we are more than happy to come to your city, to come to Mississippi. We need to set up some kind of forum or symposium where we can do that. We need to be able to raise the funds to do that, so the monies that are necessary to do some of this work will be there. You see, so we need to talk about that further so that we can get this stuff done. We don't want Sister Dorothy to have to be concerned about this, that, or the other. When once things start moving into motion, as all of you know, things need to get done, and you get stuck. And this is why a lot of times our people have to go to these other groups, because they have the resources. Well, the enemy is going to make sure they have the resources, because the enemy wants to make sure you keep going to them so that they can determine how they want it done and or if they want it done. So we are left with these people, these various groups, you know, these various whatever they're called, representing supposedly our best interests. But when you ask the question, and this is what I tell everyone, how you can begin to differentiate one thing from another, just ask, where's the school, where's the hospital or health center, where's the community center, where's the cultural center that they built in 50 years? You see, in your community, you have a national group, then there should be some national thing. Where
infrastructure.
Are they?
Mm-hmm.
You see? So
that's right. Preach.
I'm saying you can begin to call these things very clearly based on what has really been produced that is going to be ongoing, there for you, in place, and is servicing you. This is what we're talking about building and doing, you see? But, you know, it's a process. But it ain't going to take us 50 years, that's for sure. So I'm saying that to say, my sisters, we're ready to go to work. As you just heard earlier, Brother Randy has given several ideas, I think solutions, and certainly strategies to move things forward and get some results, because that's what we're about. We're not about just some hoopla and jumping in front of a camera. People didn't know who I was, and I wasn't trying to get them to know, really, but I was forced, because you had so many people running around telling lies. I had to make sure that, you know, people knew that, oh, wait a minute, no, don't, no, cut it, no. So
right.
We need to do this stuff.
And I'm I would be very surprised if they have not tried to tarnish your name, discredit you, so that, you know, other people have this cloud around you as to what's going on with you. There's a lady in Denver, Colorado, when I was listening last week. Did anybody ever call her to try to help her? There was another brother
that
came.
Oh, yes, definitely. Absolutely. In fact, she would be the first to tell you that when her son first was arrested, we had Sister on our radio program, and after that, Brother Lee, who is another one of our brothers, started making calls.
Right.
Excuse me?
Yes, he brought that up last Saturday. I heard it, but I've been talking with her this week since I heard about her situation this weekend. She's looking for someone just to go to court with her and her son, well, her son next week sometime, and I don't know when they go to court, so I've been trying to call out to Denver to see if I can get somebody to go there and just be an objective person, because she's very afraid and she has reason to be. I'm surprised. It's just unbelievable.
The only thing
this is why I again said to all of you today, last week, whenever, and I'll say this again, sisters, when will we come together, support the Million Woman Movement realistically, so that we don't have sisters just out there with nowhere to go, with no support? See, it's really on us now. It doesn't make sense for women to keep calling around, trying to get help. Who's going to get help from? If we're not going to be dealing with something, we've already shown our capabilities. I mean, when the march happened, and it happened without corporate sponsoring, it happened without, you know, a whole bunch of hoopla, it happened and remains the largest gathering in the world. So what more do people need to support? I've been pleading with sisters for the past 16 years. And so now this stuff is getting so bad that if we don't begin to formulate, white women have all kinds of groups. They have national groups that deal with social justice issues. They're in the rooms where politicians are lobbying. Where's ours? So, sister, I hear you, but what I've oftentimes have told sisters, many who I have helped, do you realize that 9 times out of 10, after they are helped, I don't hear from them again?
I know. I don't either, but it doesn't. I hear you. I understand that, but I think it's very sad that here's this woman and can't get an objective, like one or two people to go in there and just sit in that courtroom with them. Now, that we do here in Minneapolis pretty well. But those are, the research, we really don't need any more research. You can look at that book by Michelle Alexander.
We do need research. You know why, sister? Because where is the statistics about women in there?
Okay, hold up. I'm not finished. You can go and you can look at the stuff by Dorothy Roberts. The research has already been done.
But the point that I'm making, my sister, is, and this research is not done. And if it is, it's nowhere accessible. There's a lot of research that's done. But do you understand, in having a clearinghouse, in having something that has that information readily available and have it, a variety of it, for a person to have to go look for research from the Utah College or from the you're running all around. Why should there not be one centralized place where sisters can put their research, put their information, this, that, and the other? When do we think about doing those types of things? Referencing
that's
a book.
No, we need that. I'm not saying that we don't need that. That's a great idea to be able to go and pull that information.
It's an idea. It exists. It's just that sisters need to support it.
Right. I guarantee you. Anything that you want to find, you can find it in a snap. All the research about, like, Mrs. Dunn's case and how many African-American children have been at different spots, it's already been done. It's there. Dorothy Roberts, a lawyer, has done it, Northwestern University in Chicago.
Okay. Having said that it's done, It's useless if we are going to write and I'm not saying it's useless in overall, but if one needed to write a press paper on it, if I can't access it online, if I don't have access to it, or if, let's say I went to the group I work with, I'm on the board of, on Monday. It's a human rights group for black women. If I don't have my hands on the document itself, telling someone it exists isn't real, which means that somebody, as my sister Empress said, there needs to be a clearinghouse, not that I have to go to a university library. People say, you know what, I'm going to have everything. I'm in my dad's library. My dad was a chaplain, a minister. Every kind of book in terms of doing ministry to help people in distress is here in his library. We're going to collect the material. And if a call goes out,
I can, within 2 or 3 minutes, the same way you could cite the title, which
right.
is beautiful in the author, you'd be able to either have it on a website or on a DVD or a CD-ROM or a jump drive, whatever, and that could be moved. This is what other people do, which means we could put a brief out. And,
uh-huh.
and because here's the name, I left this out. The person's sister that we need to raise hell with, it's a woman by the name of Congresswoman Bass from California. She's the one that's supposed to deal with adoption and children. And it's a black woman. By
wow.
the way, sisters, while all this madness is going on, and this is why I get angry, a lot of black women here in D.C. in these positions and that, they're more anti-female than the sexual harasser you've got on your job. And they get a pass because they're female. And women have not held women accountable. So when I do my advocacy for Depo Provera to prevent our sisters from being killed, the people who fight us are black women who are serving the Khazars and the Democratic Party and Planned Parenthood and Emily's List. That's Barbara Lee. That all of them get money from the very same people who have stolen your children. And therefore, and if you're a male, you're told not to speak up on women's issues because you're a man. But if the women don't do it, then our children are damned. That's why the information needs to be centralized. There needs to be advocates. We need to have a speakers bureau. And I want to say the sisters from Mississippi, both of you guys are awesome. If you guys came to D.C., I'm going to try to set it up. I know that I can hook you up with some people to put this in radio, at least a few places. It's better than nothing. And I also think I can reach out and get some folks who may know a person or two on the Hill to fight for this. And, sisters, I'm going to put one more thing down. When we talk about organization, there's a community that black folks don't work with and probably the people don't want to work back with black folks. But the Somali community and the Oromo community and the Ethiopian community, if a couple of y'all put your heads together, if you could find someone up there that's not anti-black American, you've got a critical mass. And right about now, the Somalis need some friends because they sure shot that woman here in D.C., and they were calling her Somali at first when they wanted to cover up blowing her away. They need, some of them need y'all. And let me tell you something. The congressmen and the senators in Minnesota, I know this because I work not directly but indirectly with the African community in Minnesota. When I threatened the senator's staff that I was going to get people in the African community to vote against them, I got everything I wanted. Now, I didn't know anybody black up there. So sometimes things that are right there sitting, because they're going to have problems. Now that people are saying folks are being terrorists going from Minnesota to kill Americans in Somalia and Kenya, they're going to need friends like y'all. And y'all need to say, we need this from you.
Mm-hmm.
That's another strategy. Got to use the numbers wherever you can get them from. And I haven't heard y'all mention yet that they've got these huge African communities up there and nobody gets along. And you guys would very easily, all the sisters, by the way, they're sexist as all get out, so you're going to have to find a man to work with y'all. But you find yourself one male, and y'all be a committee, and y'all could get some of those African folks in on there because they have issues with adoption as well.
Yeah, I have tried very hard. I have, and I know the Somali community very well here. I work with them. We put the first school in when they first came here as immigrants, and I worked at that school. We're very close. I have not been able to get them to take a stand on this yet. I think we are right around the corner from it because they have begun to go into the Somali community and start stealing their children.
I know.
And so, when this conversation is over, we
need to make certain. I have a friend who got 1,000 or more children adopted in Minneapolis, St. Paul, who's Ethiopian. And I think we're going to pull something. Okay, we don't meet by accident. I'm a descendant of Nat Turner. Conspiracy runs in my family.
I think we can pull a trick or two out of this one. I just don't know. I just feel it. The first time I heard it last week, I figured I could do something with that. Something.
Okay. Sister Hattie, I'm just curious. What are the organizations or groups in your area of black women?
You know what? We don't have any anymore. We used to have the Dorothy Hyatt group here. That's kind of fizzled out. I was actually in the process of trying to establish one, along with that other piece I was telling you about, the NAN chapter. And so I was going to, my plan is to get one going called Women United and have chapters all over the place. And that would be something I could certainly work with the Million Woman March on. And you know how it is. And I'm only a little small fish in the pond, but apparently somebody thinks I'm a big fish in the pond around here doing all the stuff that they're doing. Because I've always worked under the radar. And, you know, more recently, it's not been that way. But I have a core group of women that, you know, are older women like myself, and we work together and support each other on various things, and there's just it's so much just right around here. And then we don't really have that group anymore. We don't have any groups anymore. There are pockets of them all over. It's just very very factioned out here,
right
on that.
And
the other very elite ones, the black elite, black bourgeois.
Right.
I think they're somewhat organized too in that, and so it's more singularly. It's just different little pots.
Okay, well, again, this is some of the research that we've done over the past couple of years in evaluating where our women are and what's going on, and that is what we've pretty much come up with. That 95% of the groups and organizations that are for and or about black women are primarily local, meaning they're just in that city or just in that state. They're not national. And the ones that are national are funded by the corporations and the government. So that should tell people a lot right there. So, you know, again, I'm certainly available to talk with you more about some type of collaboration. That's what the whole vision, or part of the vision, was about. That, you know, creating a sisterhood, a connective kind of thing for the purpose of doing stuff. But it needs to be, you know, organized so that it can be effective. So again, I have your number. I'll certainly be in touch with you. February and March, again, are months that Dr. Randy Short and I will be doing some things, because it's Black History Month and Women's History Month. And I just found it really incredibly interesting that for something like the Million Woman March to be what it was, that our own women nationwide saw no need to support it after it started. And again, it goes back to what Dr. Randy Short was saying earlier about this sister, and I have to kind of go to this right now because we're going to be running out of time in a few minutes, and we're going to have to revisit this again, but the sister Miriam Carey, who was killed in D.C. Well, Dr. Randy Short asked me earlier, he said, why is there not many women, black women, asking questions about this? And it's true. There's something wrong with that picture. Why did we just accept what they said? Did you look at that girl's face? I did. Now, I mean, I know you can't tell everything by looking at a person's face, but this is messed up. Something's not adding up for me. Up.
I didn't look at. I've never even seen who the young woman was. I just saw a video of the
class. When I heard about the black woman, I'm going to find out what the heck is going on. And, you know, at least I'm going to look at it to see. See, this
so event. What do we think went on with that?
Unfortunately, we only have a minute. So what we're going to do is, Dr. Randy Short, what's your time like for tomorrow night?
What time are you talking about? This time, around this time, or a different time?
Let's say around 10.
Oh, that's
or it can be
time.
Later because
that's...
both of them, Sister Hattie, what time is it there where you are presently?
We're on Central Standard Time, Sister Dorothy and I are. She's Mississippi
okay.
and the same
okay.
as Minnesota. Actually, the
okay.
Minnesota is in Mississippi.
Okay, I got you. Okay, Brother Randy, it could be 10 or 11. It's up to you. I'm good.
Yeah.
I am too.
Okay.
I want to do something.
All right, well, then let us do part two. How about we do this?
Okay.
And then that way I can sit out a blast and let people know we are going to do part two of this tomorrow night. We're going to talk more about Sister Dorothy and come up with a plan of action, at least to begin with. And we're going to also talk about Miriam Perry, okay, because we need to do that. Something's not right here. And as black women in particular, if we don't do anything else, we should at least be trying to, you know, see what the heck happened here. There's two other incidents or two other situations I want to share with everyone. I mentioned one earlier about the young sister, 23, I believe, in Florida. Florida, again, of all places. The guy killed her. She's pregnant. They saved the baby. But she's dead. So, you know, and I have another case as well. So we need to really examine, as I told people before, the increase of violence against black women is going to be in your face. Believe me, because this system has a plan.
Yes.
And they're watching to see how we respond to what's happening to our women. And any halfway intelligent person knows if there's no response to women and children, guess what? They got you. They got you. Now, they know we're going to respond to the children. They saw that, sort of. But now they're seeing the women. So we're going to see what's going to really happen now.
A woman here, Nellie Stone Johnson, and she told me years ago they're going to come after these African-American men and put them in a penal complex. And then once they finish with them, they're coming after the women. And they're coming after the women now, and they will start with those who are what they would say dissident.
Right.
Like myself. Like the lady in Colorado, they will start with those individuals and they will frame you up, and it works for them. It's working. They're using it. There's a sister down in Houston, this ex-police woman, framed her up. They try to drain your resources, throw out a bunch
that's
of stuff
right.
there, get
that's
lawyers,
right.
and resources, take you down, and that's what's happening. It's all kinds of warfare going on.
That's right.
American
so
when they factored the attack, and this is why we're going to have to say, when you're fighting a war and someone does attacks you, any real general staff in an army says, well, why did they attack here? What's the strategic point here? What is it that they knew about the area? And I'm going to say this, and this may be hard to hear, but a lot of black women have gotten such a pass. I'm not talking about you two, on just being women, until they've gotten so soft, until these things don't really matter, you know, racism, justice. I'm not talking about you. I'm not talking about Sister Philae. And they're the kind that get hit. The sister whose son got killed, she told the son America's dream was real. All of the people who are disconnected, because they psychologically primed our sisters to affirmative action, that, you know, they get jobs without the difficulty of black men. It has shaded or obtuse or stigmatized
their vision of seeing things, and that's got them vulnerable. When they move,
I'm sorry,
and a person
we have run out of time. We're going to have to resume this dialogue tomorrow. Family, we thank all of you for tuning in. We've been talking with Dr. Randy Short, as you heard. I'm sorry I had to interrupt him, but we have run out of time. We've also been talking with Sister Hattie and Sister Dorothy. We're going to resume this dialogue tomorrow, 10 o'clock Eastern Time, and we're going to talk about Mariam Carey, of course, a young sister that was murdered by the police in Washington, D.C. We're going to talk more about some analysis of that, mind control in particular. But, family, we've run out of time. Again, I thank all of you for tuning in to this segment of New Day, Resurrection, Liberation. We will be back tomorrow with a special edition, part two of Mind Control, tomorrow here at New Day, Resurrection, Liberation. Thank you, Brother Randy. We'll talk tomorrow also with you, Sister Hattie and Sister Dorothy. We're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you, and that is in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep. But remember, there can be no real Hotep, meaning peace, until there's truly Ma'at, meaning justice. Remember, no justice, no peace, no justice, no peace, no justice, no peace.